please the court. Srinivas Behera on behalf of the appellant, Eugene Blackman. Last year, we tried this case before a South Texas jury. Regarding the objective requirement of deliberate indifference, there was no debate. As the trial court correctly stated, excessive heat in Mr. Blackman's dorm, quote, unquestionably existed. We showed the jury that in the summer of 2008, the heat index inside Mr. Blackman's dorm was 126 degrees or more for more than 10 days. It even reached 130 degrees in Mr. Blackman's dorm. This is where heat stroke is not only probable, but imminent. The level of heat is considered extremely dangerous by the warden's own internal standards, by National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration standards, by common sense, and by two of this court's decisions.
How long did you try the case before it went off on directed verdict?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How long did you this case try before it was taken away?
We tried the case for 2 days, Your Honor, about a day and a half.
And the jury was there and just one submitted to it.
That's correct, Your Honor. As a judgment as a matter, when appellees moved for a judgment as a matter of law, that's when the case was
taken. That was when you had rested, though. Plaintiff
yes,
arrested.
Your Honor.
Okay. So we hadn't heard from the defendant yet at that point?
We had not heard any evidence.
And that's what I guess the judge was thinking would be saved. I mean, as a practical matter, if the case was all ready to go to the jury, few judges would grant a directed verdict at that stage. But if there's still a defense case to be heard, I think that was the thinking. But
yes, Your Honor. So that's what we did present to the jury was whether was about the dangerous conditions, and we had an expert testify to that. Two different experts. Our Professor Balsamo out of Tulane University testified that the dangerous conditions in Mr. Blackman's dorm were obvious, pervasive, and long-lasting to every prisoner in the dorm. It affected the public itself. All 50-plus prisoners.
What was the basis of the argument to the court in support of the directed verdict? That no injury? What was the argument, the state's argument?
The two arguments from the state were that the wardens weren't aware of specific risks to Mr. Blackman himself specifically, and the other argument was about the injury, about the proximate cause. Those are the two bases for, I believe, the court's decision.
Cause or just no injury?
The argument about no injury focused on the evidence regarding Mr. Blackman's blood pressure, which completely failed to ignore all the symptoms of heat exhaustion and heat stress that Mr. Blackman testified to. We had two experts testify to all the symptoms of heat stress.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. What were the temperature levels that, under the record that they were subjected to?
We testified there. In the summer of 2008, Mr. Blackman's dorm, there's 126 degrees or more in his dorm. At one day, that reached 130. On 75 out of 90 days, it reached to a temperature called which is considered dangerous. That's where heat exhaustion is possible.
What's the evidence that there was a 126-degree temperature? Did somebody measuring this?
Yes, Your Honor, because the wardens made the conscious decision not to take temperatures and humidity in the dorms, so that's when we hired Mr. Professor Balsamo. He came in, determined that the conditions inside the dorm are as hot or hotter than they are outside. It's a closed facility. Their windows are completely shut. And so all there is an air handler.
This is an expert opinion that given the outside temperatures, that in his opinion, that inside temperatures are 126 degrees.
Or higher.
Or higher. Yes, Your Honor.
I'm just trying to understand what the
oh, yes, Your Honor. We went in and we basically had to extrapolate the temperatures because we went in there, I believe, in September of 2010. To take those temperatures, and we extrapolated them based on historical temperatures. Yeah. So there's internal documentation from the wardens that the temperatures were the same as they were inside as they were outside. The one time that the wardens came in with the assistant warden Garza was actually there with the maintenance supervisor, and they took the temperature. I believe it was 108 inside the dorm. That day, that means the heat index was 115. And that's from expert testimony that we brought.
Heat index. You're talking there about a figure that is not absolute temperature, but you're talking about the combination of humidity to get that heat index. Do we know what the absolute temperatures were? It's been a long time since it's been 126 degrees or anything above 104 or 5. So I'm trying to understand what this evidence really
yes,
told us.
Yes, Your Honor. Professor Balsamo, basically, that's how you calculate the heat index. You take the temperature and you take the humidity.
I understand. What was the temperature?
The The temperatures were above 100 in several cases.
Was what?
Were above 100 in several cases.
Well, that doesn't help me very much. Above 100 goes a long way.
We live in Texas.
Are we talking about 101 degrees?
No, we're talking about 108 on one day, 104 on another day. And then you combine that with the heat index, and obviously, you combine that with the humidity, and the heat index can shoot through the roof.
Is the heat index sort of like the opposite of the wind chill when it's cold?
It is, Your Honor. It's the way your body perceives the temperature.
Yeah.
That's calculated based on a normal person, not even a person that's elderly like Mr. Black.
Right. Let me ask you this. What exactly should the warden have done differently? I understand the warden should go in and take the temperature. All right, it's 103 degrees, 104, 105, because the warden is not going to have the heat index by just taking a thermometer. But in any event, whatever it is, it's hot. What is the warden supposed to do? What could she have done differently that would have satisfied you or resulted in not bringing
this? Well, yes, and I don't believe that the remedial measures was the basis for the court's decision, but that's a good question. The wardens had a lot of available opportunities to remediate the heat there. There's only one fan in the dorm, and the dorm's closed, so there's really no ventilation occurring. The fan's about 10 feet up high. What they did later on, after Mr. Blackman sued, was they installed an additional fan. One of the other things we testified to...
Does the warden have the power to do... Because typically, in my experience with government, is when things cost money, one has less authority than when things don't. And so does the warden have the authority to order the other fan, or...?
The warden did order the fan, Your
okay.
Honor.
So there's no question about
authority
to do that.
That's circumstantial evidence that they did have the authority.
And has that helped?
Mr. Blackman was already transferred out of that facility by that point. He said he testified that every day he felt the heat exhaustion. They could have also transferred him out into an air-conditioned facility.
Your theory really is they don't have to know about Mr. Blackman specifically, that they know that there's a danger to everyone, okay? And so some other people have to stay in this unit. I'm asking what practically the warden could do that would have made a difference to everyone.
Well, it's a fact of everyone, but we're also talking about a prisoner that's more susceptible to heat stress than others. There's people with pre-existing conditions, and there's also people which are 6 years old.
The problem is you run right up against the lack of medical, when you start making that argument, the lack of medical evidence that Mr. Blackman's blood pressure did not go up. And I realize he's saying he told doctors stuff and they wouldn't write it down and everything, but the bottom line is there's very little objective medical evidence here. So I'm with you that just putting prisoners in an oven and turning it on, even if they live through it, is not appropriate conduct. Nonetheless, it seems to me that if you're going to say specifically to him there was a harm, then you have to show the wardens knew about it and you have to show what it was.
Your Honor, I do think there was objective evidence that came out about the wardens are trained every year in May. They posted it up. I believe it's Defendant's Exhibit 15. It's a heat awareness card. The very first line on it says, elderly are more susceptible to heat stress. That's 60 and above. And Mr. Blackman actually testified to the same thing. And when he, in his grievances, he's making specific statements about his health condition, about how it's affecting people with high blood pressure, about people affecting with diabetic episodes. He also testified that he's been going to that's what you're talking about, conflicting medical testimony. But if you have a prisoner that's in this category where they know this category of prisoners is more susceptible to heat stress, then they have to do something about it.
So if we have a 20-year-old healthy prisoner, we can leave him in C8, but we need to move the elderly and high blood pressure guys somewhere else. That's your position?
Your Honor, the heat conditions were pervasive and obvious to everybody. So depending on, they have to obviously prove an injury, right? I mean, some people, myself, if I'm out in playing tennis for 5-6 hours, it's not the same thing as my father going out there and playing for six. It's going to affect everybody differently, and that's medical objective testimony. That's testimony that is information that they know about. So if you're having certain prisoners that are affected differently, I mean, that's the same thing that happened in the Gates case. They're talking about inmates who had mental illnesses. There's different categories where heat stress affects different types of prisoners differently. So I don't know if there's a genuine categorical approach that you can take to certain prisoners.
Let me ask you a question about these facilities at Bevo. Were these dorm-like structures, single level or multiple level, or what were they?
It's essentially a 60 by 60 room. I believe it's an old Naval Air Force base that was converted into a dorm facility.
I have to tell you that I went through training at Lackland Air Force Base in 1961, in August, July through August. Our barracks were not air-conditioned. There was no such thing. That was just a routine and so forth. It was hot. It was uncomfortable and unpleasant. But we didn't. That's what I'm trying to really understand. There was a suggestion in the brief that somehow the guards turned on the heat. Is there any evidence in that in the record?
Your Honor, there was the only evidence in the record regarding that is Mr. Blackman's complaint to come investigate the actual dorm. He felt that someone was turning on
that
there's heat being pumped through the air handler, which there was because it's heat from outside. But his theory there was really irrelevant.
Is there a facility for doing that?
Your Honor, there's nothing in the trial record about whether someone had the ability to do that. But I think that's
really
a good point.
Is that he thought that they must be doing that because it's hot in here.
Yeah. Exactly, Your Honor. And that's the key to this case. The example that I was coming up with, my wife,
well,
she tells me.
There's a difference between it just being hot in here because of natural conditions and guards turning on the heat. And that's a very different, that moves into a deliberate indifference and quite clearly. So I think it's very misleading to say that there's evidence here that these guards, in fact, introduced heat into that in addition to that.
Well, Your Honor, if the heat is a certain level, regardless, and they don't do anything about it, I think we're still in the deliberate indifference.
I don't disagree with that, but there's a difference in the legal measures as to whether the guards are deliberately increasing the levels of heat that are otherwise going to be there. Now, that's the second problem. The obligations to mitigate natural conditions, all right, that's a different, but there are differences, and it has a lot to do with cyanide and the kind of indifference that can mark the differences between constitutional violations.
And I agree,
is it fair
Honor.
To say that the heat that he was perceiving being a heater is because they were circulating the outdoor heat?
Yeah.
And it was so hot as a result that the air vents were blowing hot air on him, and he perceived that as a heater.
That's the focus. That's what the allegations
as
were in the amended
complaint. As opposed to it was 110, and they made it 120 on purpose. It's just they were circulating such hot air in there that the perception was the heater was on.
Right, and that's right, Your Honor, and that's the idea. I mean, the reason for the heat coming out, whether it's for someone turning up the heat or not, it's hot in there, and they didn't do anything about it.
Thought that it's hot.
Right. It's the example I was having. My wife tells me to throw away the trash because it smells like old chicken. If I come back and I tell her it wasn't chicken, it's just a rotten banana peel, if I don't throw away the trash, we still have the same issue. We're not really focusing on the heat. We're not remediating the heat there. And so this is...
You're saying that they shouldn't have circulated air at all?
No, Your Honor, but they should do extra remedial measures. We talked about
but circulating the heat... does mitigate it. I mean, even though it's the natural thing. If you've talked about the heat index, turn on a fan and you'll start to mitigate and drop that heat index because you're moving air past the body. Now, it may be warm air, and you'd like to have an air condition, but the choice between sitting in one of those things with no air and moving air, I don't know what your expert said about that, but some of that defies common sense.
Yes, Your Honor, there's a key issue in this case was the lack of ventilation in the dorm. I mean, that's an issue. It's the same thing, common sense. You're in a car, the first thing you do is roll down.
They were using military barracks and didn't air condition them for the prisoners.
I'm sorry, say that again?
They were using military barracks and didn't air condition them for the prisoners.
Right, and we're not contending that air conditioning should be required in these facilities, but there are ways that you can help these prisoners, and that's what, and especially Mr. Blackman, they could have transferred him to an air conditioned unit, which they did after he filed the lawsuit. They could have, ice water was a big issue in this case. They said that Mr. Blackman testified extensively that they were drinking out of the sinks because there wasn't ice water. 4 out of the 8 sinks were broken. And so that's everybody, 50 prisoners fending for themselves to get ice water. And so I just briefly wanted to say the trial, there was some direct evidence with Assistant Warden Garza. Please take a look at the grievances from Defendant's Exhibits 5, 7, and 8. Those are Blackman's grievances.
Do you have record sites for those?
Yes, Your Honor, I can provide that. I believe on 1378 is where they're talking about Assistant Warden Garza in the actual unit.
No, I know the transcript, but sometimes these exhibits don't make it into at least the thing that I can access online.
Yes,
and right. So I can it's sometimes hard to find these exhibits, so that's why I was asking for a record size.
I'll make sure to have that record for you on this thing.
The transcripts are easy enough to find. It's the exhibits that sometimes become a bit of a chore.
Some of this stuff doesn't make sense. I think that's what happened to Hutch, but I would have let the jury decide it.
May it please the court, Nadine Philpotts for Warden Kakua and Warden Garza. Mr. Blackman presented no evidence that Warden Kakua and Warden Garza were deliberately indifferent to a substantial risk of serious harm to him at the Garza East.
Well, what about the evidence of not giving them water and ice water or water or adequate water?
Mr. Blackman called Warden Kakua to testify, and she testified that the inmates were provided a jug filled of ice water 3 times a day. And
what did he what was the conflicting testimony? That was the only evidence? I thought there was conflict in that.
Well, that's the evidence he put on, was that Warden Kakua, she testified that they were providing them with ice-cold water 3 times a day, and that's in addition to them going to the chow hall to have their meals, where they're provided a beverage. But in the dorm, there was a cooler with ice-cold water. Although
was that continuously available?
Yes, it was.
Then what's the 3 times a day?
It was replenished 3 times a day.
Oh, okay.
Although Mr. Blackman complains that he had to drink out of a sink, even though the ice cold water was provided, there is no evidence that the wardens were aware that they weren't getting it, or about any breakdown in their system. And the system they had in place was exactly as presented in Gates versus Cook.
I'm a little confused. What did he testify to?
I believe he testified to drinking water from the sinks in the dorms.
Yeah, and I took it that mean that that's the only way he was getting water.
But the warden testified to that there were provided
ice. I understand that, but this is taken away from the jury. You're just describing conflicts and evidence.
They didn't present any evidence, though, that the warden was aware that he was drinking out of the sinks, that he wasn't getting any water.
Well, he kept filing all these grievances, and no one seemed to care. They just kept saying they'd repair the sink. I mean, did no one how large is this facility that the warden is the warden of?
The facility is encompasses two complex. She is the warden. Warden Kakua was over the east, Garza East.
Okay, how
as well
many
as Garza
prisoners
West.
Are housed under her control?
Under her control, there were several. I don't recall the exact number, but it's in the record. She testified to that there were several inmates at the Garza East unit. I would estimate somewhere in the thousands on the east, and then you had the west unit, which she also supervised. So she had assistant wardens who helped her at both.
Would it have been to go in there and check out what was going on? That's what I'm trying to get to. I don't want to put undue burdens on government officials, but at the same time, this idea that somebody's essentially sitting in an oven with no ability to open a window and whatever in the heat of Texas and so on, I mean, that's just somewhat worrisome.
Well, the evidence, the record shows you that Mr. Blackman, when he filed a grievance complaining that someone was turning on the heaters, this was investigated. They checked into this and they explained to him that no one can access the heaters from the picket where he was alleging they were turning it on, and that the heaters are automatically come on when the temperature drops below like 60-something degrees, I believe.
Okay, I mean, I think we figured out what was happening, which was it was circulating hot air that was so hot he thought the heater was on. But I still have the problem with what was done to address the fact that it was extremely hot and these guys are in a place with no windows and apparently one fan and questionable amounts of water.
Okay. Well, what was done is that prior to Mr. Blackman being housed in a dorm, medical checked him to clear him to make sure that he was not sensitive to any extreme temperature conditions. And he was cleared by medical before he was housed in a dorm. Once he was placed in a dorm, he even testified that the inmates could wear lighter weight clothing, They had access, open access to the showers.
Were the guards in the dorm, or were they outside?
You had a guard in the picket, as well as a rover.
But it was air conditioned?
The picket was, but the rest of the facility.
Well, the guards were all air conditioned. They weren't. The guards were not subjected to the same conditions as the prisoners.
Yes, they were. The guards were.
Yes, they were subjected.
They were subject to the same conditions. They wore heavier clothing than the inmates were at
but
the
facility.
But were
they stationed within this oven area without the ability to go out and go into the air-conditioned picket or whatever?
There was not a dorm stationed in the C8 dorm to stay there, but there were dorms stationed throughout that little unit where the dormitories were to go back and forth in between each dorm to check. You had one officer in the picket, and then you had a rover, another correctional officer, who went into the dorms for C building, and they went to each dorm to do their rounds.
Yeah.
But in this case, Mr.
But this was a minimum security, right? So there was a fair amount of... I mean, it wasn't as intense as if it was some other level of security in terms of their roving and their watching over the prisoners.
Well, the difference in this case is that he wasn't confined to being in that room 24/7.
But it was a minimum security, right?
It's not a minimum security facility where he was housed.
Is he a minimum security prisoner?
Was he a minimum security prisoner? I believe.
Maybe I misread that somewhere. I thought I had in my head that he was not under those kinds of, it's like he's on death row under very extreme security conditions.
That is correct, Your Honor. He was not under death row.
Is there any security risk to giving prisoners more water or something like that? Is that a security issue, or why wouldn't you give them adequate water?
There was no complaint by him to the wardens that he was not getting sufficient water. He did not put them on notice that he was not getting sufficient water. They were not informed of these conditions, and what you'll see is that, unlike other cases, Mr. Blackman was able to leave his dorm to go to air-conditioned areas of the prison, like the law library.
What complaints did he make, administratively?
The complaint he made was that someone in the picket is turning on the heaters. That complaint was investigated.
Yeah, okay.
That was a step one grievance. He appealed that grievance and by filing a step two grievance. In that complaint, then, he's saying, I don't think they followed up on my step one. Please address this issue. In that grievance, then he complained about the heat affecting him. That grievance was not seen by anybody at the unit level. That grievance was reviewed by a regional office. So the warden, Warden Cuckoo and Warden Garza, didn't see that grievance and didn't know.
Well, this lawsuit was tried as the prisoners, as I understand it, were being housed in unsafe conditions because of the heat, extreme heat. And I'm trying to go back to the underlying and prerequisites of administrative exhaustion as to what this prisoner was complaining about prior to this lawsuit. And my question is whether or not this was the complaint beyond, or is it we just have that he thought they were turning on the heater?
That is all we have, Your Honor, is his complaint that they were turning on the heaters, and from that complaint he appealed it to a step two. That is the grievance that he'd used to say he had exhausted his administrative remedies.
So he only filed one grievance, is what you're saying.
I thought
he filed more than one.
He filed two grievances, one being the step one. And what happens if they're dissatisfied with the response to it, then they can appeal it by filing a step two. And that is what he did.
And those that's all he did?
And that's all he did regarding that issue.
What was the state's response to the lawsuit? Did it quarrel with the exhaustion of the claims that were being made?
Your Honor, at the summary judgment level, the magistrate judge had recommended that the motion be granted. I cannot recall whether the exhaustion argument was raised,
but there was a recommendation to grant it, but the district court judge disagreed with the magistrate judge. The
magistrate judge recommended that the case be dismissed because they had not been exhausted.
I don't believe that was the basis. There was an argument about Mr. Blackman satisfying the objective requirements of deliberate indifference, as well as the same issues presented before this court were the grounds and basis for the motion for summary judgment.
I'm not trying to make an argument for the state. I'm just trying to understand the progression of this claim. And I assume that if you were unhappy with the exhaustion, you would have raised it, preserved your error, but apparently you didn't, so.
Your Honor, I believe it
You're not arguing it here, so.
I believe it was raised. This case has been pending for a long time, and the complaint was amended. And at one point, there was a previous motion for summary judgment that was filed before.
Did that testimony state any reasons for granting the directed verdict or not?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Did Judge Husbeth state in the record any reasons for granting the motion or not?
The motion for judgment as a matter of law, he stated, was granted because Mr. Blackman failed to demonstrate that the wardens acted deliberately indifferent, that they were aware of a risk of harm to him.
You know, the thing that I don't understand about that, you're talking about the heat index being on some days at levels that would be classified as extremely dangerous. And the warden knew, because it was right on the warden's form that he or she used, that for people over 60, they're particularly sensitive to this kind of heat. I think one could argue here that the warden was on notice when the temperature got that high, that someone in his age bracket could be seriously affected by this. And apparently, all of the symptoms of not heat stroke, but heat exhaustion, I guess it is, the lesser of the two, he had them all. At least he testified to them. Now, he may not, I suspect that he didn't recognize them as symptoms of heat exhaustion, but he had them, and he testified to them. So the warden knew that when you have temperatures at that level, someone who's 60 years old and older, and particularly in his case, on blood pressure medication, is going to be particularly affected by this heat, dangerously affected.
Your Honor, what is in the record is that Warden Kakua did not know how old Mr. Blackman was. When she got to the unit was May of 2008.
You mean the warden, of course they knew how old the prisoners were. They got the prison records there. I mean, the idea they don't know, I don't understand that makes no sense. Of course they know, they're charged with notice. They know how old the prisoners are.
Your Honor, they don't know the age of every single inmate as well as their medical.
Well, they know that there's somebody in that unit that's over 60. They know that much.
60?
Yes.
60 is still pretty young,
in the prime of youth.
Yes, but in this case, though, they had implemented procedures which undercuts their argument of deliberate indifference.
Which they frankly didn't follow. I mean, these guys are sitting in an oven in the heat of the heat, and no one gives a darn is how this is coming across. And the only question to me is, does it cross the line into a constitutional problem? I mean, there's not a person in this room who would go and sit in that prison for a day in that kind of heat. And we frankly would arrest people for leaving their dog in a car with the windows rolled up, and that's what this is, except it was a human being.
Except the temperatures in a car will go up to 180 degrees very quickly. It's an extraordinary jump in temperatures with children get left in cars and with
here
animals.
It may not have gone above 126.
Yeah, well, no, it'll jump. It'll go run right past 126 degrees in the car. But the car, it's because of the light, the refract, I won't go off into that, but I unfortunately know too much about that.
What we have here in this case is we don't have any evidence as what the exact temperature was inside the dorm.
Testimony that if believed by a jury, and nobody challenges Professor Balsamo's credentials, if believed by a jury, this thing maybe didn't get to the 180 degrees that we were just positing, but to me 126, 130, 140, 150 sounds pretty darn hot in a windowless room with this hot air circulating by one fan in this big unit and people drinking out of sinks and lining up for the shower. I mean, the question to me is that a constitutional violation? But it's, if you win this case, it's by a very thin reed, is all I can say.
But what we have here is the wardens have a system in place. Whether there was a breakdown in the system by other TDCJ personnel, that's negligence on those individuals' parts. The wardens were doing something in this case.
I mean, the warden lives there, right? The warden isn't in some, you know, isn't in Maine taking the summer off, is she? I mean, she's there. She knows it's hot. This isn't some mystery.
He's in an air-conditioned house.
But is the warden on site? Is the warden in Texas?
The warden, yes, is in Texas.
So she knows it's hot.
Yes, and that's why she testified that they had implemented all of
but
these
But she also said they
procedures.
Didn't go around measuring the temperature like they're supposed to.
They didn't measure the temperature inside the dorm consistently every month. They did not do that. They measured the outdoor temperature. At this point in time, it's not in the record, but they do have a policy where they're measuring the temperatures
inside.
What
were the outdoor temperatures in this time? That's what I was trying to get a handle on.
Your Honor,
live in a pretty hard part of Texas, but 126 degrees.
That's the heat index.
Yeah, I know. I work in that temperature. But I want to know the absolute temperature. I appreciate all the heat index. That's good, but it would help me to understand what you're talking about. You're talking about 101 degrees, 103, 104. That's usually as hot as it gets.
Your Honor,
I
don't believe that the opposing Mr. Blackman presented any evidence to show exactly what was the temperature outside during the summer of 2008 while he was incarcerated.
Well, you can find it up on the Internet and get it in 30 seconds. I don't understand why they wouldn't. There's nothing, nobody even testifies to that? It makes no sense.
They provided expert testimony addressing...
What's the state doing? Never mind.
Well, y'all got a directed verdict, right? So you didn't put on evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, I did not get a chance to put on any evidence. But in addition to that, there was also another ground in which the court granted the judgment as a matter of law, and that was based on his failure to show that the heat contributed to his health problems.
And I wanted to ask about that. After Wilkins, does Mr. Blackman have to wait till he actually has a stroke and nearly dies to have a claim? Or is it sufficient that he's experiencing these symptoms of heat exhaustion and that if something isn't done, he will have a stroke? I mean, in other words, do we have to wait till you kill someone in order for that person to have a cause of action, or are they able to try to protect themselves from such an extreme event as a stroke or something like that?
No, you don't have to wait until someone dies. What Wilkins, which is a use of force case, let us look focuses on is that you need to look at the conduct of the individual in addition to any kind of injury to see if the conduct is repugnant of the conscience of mankind. In this case, it wasn't. The wardens were doing something. They had measures in place. And if there was a breakdown in it, it wasn't. There's no evidence that they were aware of it.
If you leave all the facts as you see them the same, but three prisoners died, would it be a different case?
If three, Your Honor.
Everything remains constant except you had three prisoners die of heat exhaustion. What? Now what? Is the case different?
Yes.
Why?
The case.
You're hanging on deliberate indifference. I mean, what changes? This person did not die, but he very well could have been very close to it. Heat exhaustion can take you out pretty fast.
Well, yes, if it was related to the heat.
Yeah, I'm saying three prisoners died.
If it's related to the heat and the wardens were aware that this individual was suffering from the heat, then yes, It's a totally different case.
Well, yeah, it's a totally different case if the prisoners were aware and we have all the facts the same. I'm getting back to awareness in part.
Well, the evidence showed that the heat did not contribute to his blood pressure being aggravated or into any health problems.
Well, that's not true, okay? The evidence shows that he, according to his own testimony, that he had all the symptoms of heat exhaustion continually. It's just he didn't know it. I mean, he didn't know that he didn't have a label to put on the way he felt, but he had the symptoms of heat exhaustion for a long time during this summer, according to his testimony. So, I mean, there is evidence that the heat affected him. Okay.
Would you like me to address that?
No, that's okay.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Behara.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, with regard to the temperatures, Professor Balsamo got the temperatures from National Weather Service in Beeville. That has all the temperatures. That's how he calculated the heat index. We didn't go through each individual temperature, but that's how he calculated it. And that's the same. The reason why this was so perplexing that we had to hire this. The Valagura versus Mendoza decision came 4 months before which you were on the panel, came 4 months before Mr. Blackman's incarceration at this exact same facility, the infamous Garza East Unit. And they still had no rational, fact-based policy to take the temperatures in the dorms. That's the same allegation that they had in Valagura. And so that was one point I wanted to address there.
I'm still not clear what the temperatures were.
What were the absolute temperatures?
The actual temperatures. No one seems to know that.
That was, Your Honor, in the summary judgment evidence how he calculated within the trial for brevity. We went straight to determined how heat index.
When I get back to my office, I can get it in 5 minutes.
Exactly,
I
mean, Your Honor.
Knowledge. This is not rocket science.
That was the demonstration we did when we brought. Warden Kakua up to the stand. We showed her. We printed out temperatures from that very day, from that morning, that are just as easy to pull up. Very easy. You can just go to the internet and pull up the temperatures. That was the demonstration to show that there's circumstantial evidence that they should have known about these temperatures. That it's obvious.
Let me ask you this: did anybody challenge the notion of this heat index science? In other words, that if the temperature is 100 degrees in Dallas and it's 100 degrees in Houston, that a human being in those cities would have a very different experience because Houston is a lot more humid than Dallas?
Your Honor, there was test because the heat index, the humidity was not available in Beeville. So Professor Balsamo took the closest readings that he had, which were for Corpus Christi.
My question is whether anyone challenged the science of heat index. In other words, said this is junk science. Humidity makes no difference to your body's reaction to heat.
No, Your Honor.
Everybody accepted that that's a fairly basic proposition.
That's in all of their policy documents. That's how they determine when you're supposed to consult the heat index. If they would have consulted the heat index, that means they would have consulted it 75 times out of 90 days in that whole summer. I mean, that's what their whole policy requires them to do, which they didn't do inside.
100 degrees in Phoenix, Dallas, and Orlando, Florida are three different things. And I think we can accept that.
Yes, Your Honor.
And no one challenged that.
That was not contested. The heat index was not contested. And regarding the assertion that the guards were subjected to the same conditions, that's just not true. The guards, like we said, is a roamer. They could come in for Mr. Blackman testified that sometimes the guards wouldn't even be in there the whole day. And so it's all the prisoners. Every prisoner there was subjected to the same type of heat for that whole time. This is not the same situation as where the guards were entering this thing. We're talking about he was a minimal security inmate. That was another thing we were talking about.
Was there any evidence that security was somehow involved in all of this situation? In other words, the lack of water, windows being shut or whatever, that there were some security concerns that mandated this kind of situation?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Was there any allegation of any kind of emergency situation, that exigent circumstances that didn't permit any kind of relief?
No, Your Honor, because Dr. Adams testified to the same thing. What they do with mental illness patients is that they transfer them at night. They do all the same things that they could have done for the elderly, for someone like Mr. Blackman. When they know that the temperatures are that a a prisoner like Mr. Blackman is susceptible to heat stress, particularly more susceptible. They could have done the exact same things. We testify they could have, Warden said they could have had allowed for personal fans. She just didn't investigate it. We went through that, evaluating about moving the elderly, actually provide water, ice water continuously. If you look at the policy guidelines, they're talking about salt, actually putting salt water in there because you're losing a lot of salt water. That's an issue that wasn't even addressed.
The thing about the three times a day, was it that they replenished it and it was immediately used up? Is that why that wasn't sufficient?
No, Mr. Blackman testified that ice water was not provided every day.
Period.
Yes, okay. That they were drinking out of the sinks. And that was that's why it ties into, it's a combination argument, that they're drinking out of the sinks and that was tied to the heat also. It's in the same grievances. There's two-step one grievances. So based on this, the direct evidence of Assistant Warden Kukua being involved in this information and the circumstantial evidence based on the obviousness, Farmer requires a fact issue for subjective awareness. We would ask that the court reverse and remand this case for another trial.
Thank you.